Hey, we're Amy and Christina, two friends who got pregnant at the same time, created an Instagram to vent about how much we didn't know, and realized, wow, a lot of you are in the same boat.
Who knew? Not us. Once we realized we weren't the only people frantically Googling things at 3 a.m., we thought, let's go bigger.
So here we are with a podcast. We're bringing in experts on pregnancy, parenting, and women's health because, let's be honest, we're all just trying to survive this wild ride.
Whether you're here for real talk, advice, or just some adult conversation, welcome to What I Wish I Knew. In this episode, we chat with Jessica London, a pelvic floor physical therapist and fierce advocate for women getting the care they actually deserve postpartum. She's on a mission to make sure moms aren't left guessing about their recovery, from pelvic floor health to C-section healing to what's totally normal and what's not after having a baby.
Jessica dropped so much eye-opening info, and honestly, we walked away wondering why this isn't common knowledge. So you're definitely going to want to hear this one.
Okay, Jessica, so wonderful to have you here with us today to talk about all things postpartum and pelvic floor. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to be here. And I just think you guys are doing such great work. So just thank you for having me on so we can continue to share and educate mamas.
Yeah, we're in side note. So we're both two moms that actually have lots of questions for you.
I'm here for it. Let's do it. Let's start all the way in.
Yeah. And what I've already learned from Jessica is that everyone has a pelvic floor.
Everyone has a pelvic floor. Like, obviously, you know, Instagram right now is like trending. We're pregnant postpartum or postpartum. We're learning more about our pelvic floor because we just had babies exit them potentially. However, everyone has a pelvic floor. Children, men, women, we all have pelvic floors.
Isn't that cool? How did you get started in this world, though? You must have had some kind of like entry point where it was like, yep, this is my place. This is where I belong.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of just like landed in my lap, to be honest with you. I was also very ignorant and unaware of the current concerns and the massive gap in pregnancy, pelvic health, postpartum care, and the maternal world, if you will. But I've been a doctor of physical therapy for quite a while. I actually got my start in orthopedic medicine. So I focused primarily on the weekend warriors, the people who hurt their ankle or their knee or their back. They threw it out, bending over, picking up a pencil, and I rehabbed them back to active in fitness life again, and then specialized a bit in workers' comp injuries. And so I was really surrounded around a huge population of people from, 12 to 70, and really rehabbing and strengthening people from going into surgery, from post-surgical after they had maybe a knee surgery or shoulder surgery, or just like the random ankle sprain. And so that was really my bread and butter and was a specialist in that. And then I became pregnant myself and really realized, holy smokes, this is an interesting field, pelvic health. How am I going to prepare for my body? But still, even then, in my doctorate program, there wasn't extensive knowledge and education around pelvic health, around working with pregnant people and how to modify exercises and how to change things up, or even awareness of what pregnant people can experience, any concerns. And so it really was not until after I had a very unplanned and unexpected C-section for my first child. I was planning a home birth. I was like super natural, crunchy, all about it, and realized like, oh yeah, totally ignorant. You can't plan birth, and birth is just going to unfold the way that birth unfolds. And we have very little actual quote unquote control over it. About 3 days in labor, lots of a safe transfer to the hospital. But ended up like really exhausted, ended up having a major abdominal surgery, trying to figure out all the new mom things at the same exact time on top of all of that, of course. And as a physical therapist in general, working in acute care and outpatient and oncology, I was like mentally prepared for my PT to round my hospital room and give me bed mobility and incision care, education and exercises, things that I needed to do to modify my home environment so I could be home safer. And these are things that are normal in the rehab world, especially postoperative, whether it's oncology postoperative or whether it's, orthopedic. And that's actually when I realized like what the actual fuck, because No one came. And I even asked, I was like, is there a physical therapist or an occupational therapist going to come to my room to, you know, support me? Because I had very little knowledge too. And no one came. They're like, what are you talking about? No. And I'm like, so I'm just supposed to like rehab myself from this major abdominal surgery that I just had and take care of a human? And so really it was at that time that I initially became aware and conscious of the massive gap, not just in maternal health care, but just in postpartum rehab, like in the rehab world. And our profession has really failed mothers in that way. And there's lots of great people doing great things now, but in the moment, I was so unaware. So it was really kind of my job at that point. I had two options, complain about it, and or I could do something. And then I started to pivot more into postpartum rehab, pelvic health, C-section recovery, you know, down the road, transitioned, ended up having a beautiful redeeming VBAC at home for my second baby because of all of the knowledge that I gained from a pelvic floor birth prep, all of that standpoint. I really think that helped me also have a different birth experience, a different postpartum experience. And we've been doing it since 2020.
That's amazing. I think the world in general has become so much more knowledgeable. And even, I know this might be a random tie, but the increase in awareness and love for women's sports has also put more of an emphasis on women's athletic bodies who are having babies and then going back to play professional sports. Like pelvic floor, I think, is going to have even a bigger, I don't want to call it a renaissance because I don't think there was ever a moment for the female pelvic floor, but I think it's going to have its moment now that women's sports are such a big deal. But before we dive into that, what is the pelvic floor? Where is it?
Inquiring minds want to know.
Oh my gosh. And isn't it kind of hilarious that like we don't even have this baseline education and awareness too, especially, you know, even clients that we work with one-on-one, where we start with this basic information because they might have had three or four babies and still have no idea what their pelvic floor is, even though a baby flew out of it. And so really the pelvic floor, you know, is a group of muscles that sit at the bottom of your pelvis. So I always like to help people find it during these sessions too. If you're sitting at home, you're kind of sitting right now, you can kind of rock side to side. There's those two sit bones. Your pelvic floor spans between those two sit bones, but then it goes all the way from the front of your pubic bone. So that bony landmark right in front of, you know, the labia and the urethra and all of that, all the way back to your tailbone. So if you kind of reach back behind and you find that, you know, triangle bone in the back of the pelvis, the pelvic floor connects into that tailbone as well. So it is a group of muscles, ligaments, vascular support, that really supports the bottom of the pelvis, and it has multiple functions. It'll control our, when we want to empty our bowels and our bladder, and when we don't want to empty our bowels and our bladder. It's meant for sexual function. It's meant for lymphatic flow and blood flow support. And it also houses our pelvic organs. Our bladder, our uterus, and our rectum are also sitting right on top and literally connected into the pelvic floor, piercing through the muscles so that they are very much supported in that region as well. Of course, you know, we're peeing, and so the bladder needs to be connected. We're delivering babies, and so babies are growing, created, and exiting from that region. And then also our bowel movements, very interconnected into the pelvic floor as well. So if that gives like a general idea, it has lots of different functions. A lot of them are daily basic functions that we don't even know are working and are about until we have a problem.
So it's kind of like the MVP, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when the pelvic floor plays such a structural support to the stability of the pelvis, it's one of its core functions is stability. So even when we move our trunk, when we move our hips, when we, bend over, like the pelvic floor is stabilizing. It's stabilizing 70% of the muscle fibers of the pelvic floor are actually slow twitch, which are meant for endurance, just stabilization, control. They're kind of always on a low-grade contraction.
And so what's the difference between, I think the buzzword was Kegel. Do your Kegels. Like, mm-hmm. What is the difference between that? Is that related, or is that some kind of like random offshoot of the pelvic floor?
Yes, it's like a pelvic floor contraction, right? So being able to lift and contract the pelvic floor. That was like very standard, to be honest with you, currently now outdated advice, right? So this was like your OBs of like, well, just do your Kegels. Make sure you're doing 100 a day. Like, contract that pelvic floor or else you're going to pee your pants or have your organs fall out. You just got to do your Kegels. But what we're finding more and more is the Kegel is not as important as the awareness, the connection, the ability to be able to be spatially, somatically connected to the pelvic floor. So not only, yes, can we contract it, but also can we release? Can we lengthen? Oftentimes we find more people are stuck in a chronic contraction state, whether they've over-Kegeled or they just have, you know, past trauma potentially that has kind of seized up that region of the body, or birth trauma potentially, or birth injury that has now made the pelvic floor kind of seize up and contract. There's a lot of different reasons of why that might happen, but more people actually need to learn how to release and lengthen and gain full range of motion of their pelvic floor versus just only focus on Kegels.
Awesome. It's so good to know. And what I think about, what I learned at least with my yoga teacher training is like we actually release our pelvic floor when we inhale, which feels very different to any other muscle, right? Normally when we inhale, we're contracting our muscle. And as we exhale, we're releasing it. But is that correct that it's opposite for the pelvic floor?
You are spot on. And not a lot of people have that awareness or that understanding. So that's amazing that you're yoga.
I get a gold star.
That's so cool, right? Because if you think about your bicep, like when we're working the muscle, we're contracting the muscle, we're shortening the muscle. The interesting thing about the pelvic floor is actually like it's always on a low grade contraction. So we need to be able to release and lengthen in order for it to actually quote unquote work. So when we're peeing or we're pooping, right, or we're having a baby exit the vaginal canal, it's working by also lengthening and releasing. And so by it being connected to breath is just based off of this core canister visualization, if you will, of like the top of the can is the diaphragm, the bottom of the can is the pelvic floor, and they are inversely related. So as you take a breath in, the diaphragm flattens, and the only way that the pressure can go is downwards, right? Because it's a closed system. So naturally, passively, we should always be seeing a little bit of lengthening and elongation in the pelvic floor with every breath in, as you've mentioned. Where we can find some dysfunction is the pelvic floor is not lengthening. It's not releasing. And so it's just stuck, guarded, tight, and tense up there, which inhibits it from forming its normal daily functions.
So what are some like things people might notice if their pelvic floor is malfunctioning?
Yes. So, and these are things too that, you know, I talk a lot about pregnancy postpartum because that's my journey. That's exactly who we specialize in working with. But you can have these issues before pregnancy as well. So this can be pain with intimacy, like pain with penetration. This can be to stay on the intimacy piece. It can be pain with an orgasm or difficulty, inability to orgasm. This could be a pelvic heaviness or a bulge down there, just feels like something's kind of stuck or falling out or like a tampon stuck feeling, this heaviness down there. This can also be unwanted leakage, right? Like peeing your pants when we did not intend to pee our pants, whether it's coughing, sneezing, exercising, not indicated for us to be leaking. That's called dysfunction of the pelvic floor, right? Other can be bowel concerns, right? Whether it's constipation, an ability to completely empty our bowels. There's a lot of different factors with that as well. But those are some of the main concerns that people start to notice. Although there's sometimes outside concerns, whether like you're having deep hip pain that's kind of unexplained or unreachable, hip pain, low back pain. So all of these things can interplay off of the pelvic floor as well because everything is so interconnected together.
And so like if you have any of those things, what's the first step, right? Like do you have to self-diagnose? Because it feels like there, again, there's a huge gap in Western medicine. You go to your doctor, are they going to be like, you need to see a pelvic floor PT? Or it feels like, at least from my perspective, we have to kind of figure it out ourselves right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like I would say 80% of doctors are not going to be advanced enough in their knowledge of the pelvic floor to even know where or who to refer you to. And that's really sad, right? Like majority of OBs even just say, well, just wait, see if it gets better. Or if not, you could do surgery, like, or do a bladder sling, like without even the referral to a conservative approach option, musculoskeletal support. We would never tell someone that had a shoulder strain or a back strain or an ankle sprain, like, I don't know, just like sit on it, see if it gets better on its own, or if not, I'll come in and I'll do some surgery on it, right? Like, we would never say that. And these are muscles at the bottom of our pelvis. And so conservative management is the first line of defense before we even consider surgery or more like higher level advanced approaches. But if you are kind of like, wait a second, I'm peeing when I sneeze and cough and exercise, and I'm having to use pads after I had a baby, or I'm feeling that feminine heaviness, or I've always had pain with intimacy. Like, if you're thinking those things now, like, first things first is, like, you've got to be your own best advocate, because independently educating yourself and knowing when to seek support is going to come from within, and as our healthcare system starts catching up. So that's the first thing. There's a lot of different options for you, just depending on what you feel most comfortable with. There's people like me that do 100% remote and virtual support. If that's your jam and you're busy and you don't have time to travel to and from appointments, and you just would rather do it in the comfort of your home, you would come to someone, you know, like me, or that does virtual pelvic health, pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond, right? There's also options to go in person. So there are pelvic floor therapists in person where you can go to a facility. They can assess you internally, externally, and be able to give you guidance that way as well. But really, my biggest recommendation is get one-on-one support customized to you as fast and as quick as possible. Otherwise, you're just sort of like just trying to figure it out on your own. And that just really prolongs you from actually healing. And then that impacts other things like mental and emotional health, socializing, right? There's so much research that connects pelvic health issues with increasing anxiety, depression, increase with social isolation, decreased physical activity. So as much as we can do to get support for you as soon as possible in an individualized way, take whatever approach feels most in alignment to you.
I'm having a memory when you were talking, Jessica, about like back in the day, how people would treat like, oh, maybe it'll get better or whatever. I just remembered, I don't know many details, but my mom had 4 kids, all natural vaginal births, bless her. And she had bladder surgery after the 4th. And the only details I remember is that, like, she basically, like, propped her bladder back up. And now I'm like, could she have maybe gone another route? Could she have done pelvic floor therapy? Did they know what the pelvic floor was at that point? I mean, that was 30 years ago or whatever. But man, I could have gone a different way.
Totally. I mean, even my own mother-in-law was asking, like, once we started this Instagram, she started following it, and I was doing stuff about pelvic floor. She's like, wait, is that why I'm in cut? Like, is that why I'm having issues? And she went and saw a pelvic floor PT and has gotten so much better. And so, like, even 30 years later, if you're having these issues, it sounds like you can come back and heal your pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Like, there is no time limit on it, which is what I do.
I always say it's never too early and it's never too late to get support. Like, even if you're in your 60s and you are listening to this, you can absolutely still make progress, because it's just like anything. If you start now, start exercising, you start going to the gym, you start being more aware of your food, you start being aware of, you know, how your body's functioning, you start walking more, you are going to see results. It's the same thing with the pelvic floor, right? Some moms will even come to us on inquiry calls being like, 3 years postpartum, and they're like, is there any chance that I'm going to get better? And I'm like, yes, you're only 3 years postpartum. Like, 100% yes. Like, you can absolutely still make changes. It just takes effort, awareness, attention, the choice to follow through, right? That's really what it is at the end of the day. And once we start having more generations, like, passing this knowledge down, I mean, our girls, like, this is going to be amazing, because they are going to be, in my opinion, like, I think about my daughter, it's probably going to be automatic at that point. They're automatically getting the resources in pregnancy, postpartum. And that's, like, my mission fueling me forward, is really just continuing to pass on this knowledge. There are even women today, you know, Amy, you said your mom was 30 years ago, but still are considering surgery without conservative options. We've saved many people from getting surgery just by doing 3 to 6 months of work together. So it's like, do not go straight to surgery is my biggest thing. There's so much hope and healing for you just by focusing on awareness, reconnection, learning about how the muscles work, contracting, strengthening, lengthening, like, and then progressing from there.
I want to come back to your journey, Jessica, because, you know, you had your C-section with your first and you had a VBAC with your second. So what did you do differently in between those two births when you were learning more knowledge? So like how did, like, just take me through it.
Yes. So during my preparation for my C-section that I didn't know I was going to have, right, I had very little pelvic floor birth prep knowledge. So I was just doing standard things of like, I know I'm supposed to exercise and stay healthy and keep moving. And so I would do a lot of like, I exercise like up until 38, 39 weeks. Like I was lifting weights still. I was walking a lot. I was doing some like mobility stuff, but didn't really know what I was doing, if you will. I was just like moving my pelvis around just from an orthopedic knowledge because that's all I had at the time. Ended up having, you know, a really long labor. And I actually think it was more mental than it was physical at that time, potentially physical. But in preparation for my VBAC, after really having the knowledge of what birth prep is like, it was kind of really part mindset and mental work, but it was also part physical work. So I did a lot more on release work, understanding of how to connect to my pelvic floor, how to release my pelvic floor, how to lengthen my pelvic floor. Because as I was preparing for a VBAC, a vaginal birth, I knew that my pelvic floor had never stretched that way before, especially our first-time moms that may be listening. This is the first time your pelvic floor is really going to be tested and stretched. And it is physiologically normal for the pelvic floor to stretch 2.5 times its normal resting length. Like, let's just think about that. Our pelvic floor stretches 2.5 times its normal resting length. So if we can give it a good start by being connected and being aware of how to start lengthening, how to start releasing, how to be okay and find safety in our body, how to find comfort in our body with the release and lengthening happening, then we're going to get a jump start on that too. So it was really also a lot about learning about baby's positioning and how important that is to a vaginal birth as well. So I focused a ton of my birth prep on making sure that I was doing mobility exercises, pelvic opening exercises, but doing the best that I could on my day-to-day lifestyle positions that I put myself in and being mindful of baby's positioning as it could also support me with a more successful vaginal birth. And then, of course, I wanted to reduce the risk of tearing as much as possible. So I did a lot of perineal prep, learning about different modalities and different things that I could do while I was laboring or was pushing. So learning pushing techniques, different positions to push in. Also doing that perineal prep too to try to reduce the risk of tearing as much as possible, which we did.
Yeah. You mentioned with your first labor, you felt like it was a lot of mental. Uh-huh. What do you think was the mental block? Was it just like letting go?
Yeah, I thought that I thought I could control birth and I thought I could control my labor. And I thought that I was going to have this, you know, birth the way exactly imagined. And I think that there is that importance of setting your mindset up for a positive birth experience, absolutely. But I think there's like that and the release of the attachment of a specific outcome, a specific process to happen. And I think that I also wasn't fully connected to letting go of control during the waves that I had. And so it was kind of a two-part, my belief system for me having the 3-day labor and then transitioning and getting all the interventions and all of the things. And I even pushed for hours before. Yep. But for me, it is a combination between baby's position, being in a tough position for vaginal birth delivery, and also my ability to let go of control and like let my body feel safe and relaxed to be able to just let this thing happen to me and let the waves roll over me that I was like tensing up. I was a little more guarded when that was happening because I didn't fully find safety in my body.
Yeah. I feel like it's a whole other conversation we can have because I feel like a lot of when it comes to birth is we think of what we see in the movies, right? And I think now women are starting to finally tell the truth of like, okay, these are like the actual realities of what this can be like. And you can still have a positive birth, even if it doesn't go the way that you wanted it to.
I feel like the way that birth is portrayed is sort of like Cliff's Notes. Like it's all true. Oh, this happens and this happens and this happens. But there's so many details that happen all throughout. And also that the story could go either way. Like my water broke for both of my kids, which is actually not that common. And I didn't know that that was a thing at all. And I think there are people who also think like, oh, your water breaks like in the movies and it's a waterfall gushing out of you. And you're like, oh, I'm having a baby. And then an hour later, there's a baby. Also doesn't really happen that way. So, yeah, I think there's so much more happening to your body that you need to address and be aware of that no one talks about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it really is like a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual experience, birth and postpartum too. And I think that, you know, being open to the unknowns and the unexpected and just being unattached to maybe what happens will also decrease the feeling of like a traumatic birth experience too, because something was done to you that you were not in control of. And so it feels traumatic. But I think if we also go into birth and pregnancy prep with a mindset of like, this is what I desire, this is what I envision, this is what I'm ideally planning for, but I'm also here for the unfolding of how things navigate and how things happen. And I think it is also dependent on the birth location that you're at, and you're going to prepare differently, whether you're planning for a home birth or a birthing center birth or a hospital-based birth. It's really important to also be educated and empowered on like what those options and choices are for you, and knowing and choosing what feels like most in alignment. And that will also help with the birth prep process too.
I want to move back into postpartum, because there's a whole portion of like what you do in particular that we haven't even started talking about. Postpartum, what is the most crucial thing, do you think, to start with when you are postpartum? And you're coming back into being able to move your body. I know where I started, but I want to kind of hear it from you first.
Yeah, absolutely. Find your team in pregnancy would be my number one of like, get your resources, get your people already set up in pregnancy, at least have a session or have some birth prep sessions with them, because we're not only establishing the connection to their pelvic floor, we're establishing trust in the relationship, we're establishing rapport. So that when you have that baby, no matter what birth method, C-section, vaginal birth, injuries, boom, you already have that person that you can talk to know exactly what you need to do for your body. So I always say that's like the prequel to postpartum, is what you set yourself up with in pregnancy. In postpartum, really, it's just about being kind to your body. There is a very different birth protocol and process that we take personally with C-section clients versus vaginal birth clients. And it's important to address that too, because if you've had a vaginal birth, you are really trying to be more horizontal early on. We're really trying to protect the perineum, the pelvic floor, from being more in the upright or loaded upright position where you're carrying the baby, you're carrying the baskets of laundry. Like the pelvic floor is being loaded in an upright position, which puts a lot of gravity and force and pressure on the pelvic floor. And it's very vulnerable if you had a vaginal birth. So really, I focus on protecting the perineum and the pelvic floor as much as possible in more of a horizontal position, being in your bed for longer than you think that you need to, and also just focusing on immediate acute rehab. So this can be bed mobility by, you know, rocking your hips side to side, by dropping your knees side to side, by reconnecting to your breath again, by reconnecting to that you know, diaphragm and pelvic floor connection that we talked about earlier, you know, in this session, is like really allowing and your feel your body connect, feel your body release, feel your body contract, so you can establish a better mind-body connection. Just like in any injury, there's like nervous system distortion, spatial distortion that happens of like, where am I connecting in space? How do things work again? And that might resonate for people who've had past injuries. And so your pelvic floor is doing the same thing. It was just stretched 2.5 times normal resting length. Nervous system, connective tissue, fascial integrations, all is trying to figure its own way out again and to reconnect. So taking your time, vaginal birth, the first couple of weeks, focus on bed mobility, focus on reconnection, slow, gradual, loaded exercises in an upright position over time. And then for C-section early acute rehab, we are trying to focus on protecting incision site. So not as much focus on perineum and pelvic floor, but a bit more on incision site. So making sure that it's protected, that it's not going to get infected, that you have clean hands and that you're, you know, using the bandages appropriately, that we're using an elastic binder for those first 2 weeks to protect that incision site as much as possible. And also focusing on mobility as well to reduce adhesions and restrictions. But we also recommend walking a bit earlier in C-section recovery, truly just based off of reducing post-operative surgical complications. So blood flow, lymphatic flow, this all promotes a good healing experience. And the C-section itself, there's no load-bearing joint, right? It's not like a knee that can't, you know, you can't put weight on it. So the walking, we call this early ambulation. This doesn't mean go rocks around the block, but in hospital ambulation, actually. And this is still kind of cutting edge. There are still nurses and OBs that do not understand the research and education that's come out on early post-operative ambulation for C-section moms. So like, yes, safely get out of your bed and safely go down the hall with partner support or a walker if you need to. Try 200 feet and then come back and rest. Then get your feet elevated and making sure that we're reducing, you know, risk of blood clots. And so that will all help post operation to try to reduce as many like what we call bounce backs to the hospital for any post-surgical complications that can come up.
And there's also then scar maintenance that comes with a C-section too. I've seen a lot of like red light therapy, massaging the scar and all that fun stuff because, well, at least from what Instagram keeps feeding me is like the shelf that you get from a C-section scar. Is that true?
Yeah, totally. Because there was an incision there and right. And normal hip surgery or shoulder surgery, knee surgery, like part of our job as rehab therapists is to focus on scar management, scar mobilization, making sure that those adhesions don't form because we want mobility in the tissue. We want elasticity. So same thing with C-section. We need to be able to manage the scar appropriately. So what we start with, you know, around that 2-week mark is we start with like early what's called desensitization. So it's just bringing like a cotton or a towel across the incision site to decrease any like sensitivity issues that might develop, numbness that might develop around that incision site. Since we talked about the nervous system is a little like, what just happened? So we're trying to bring some sensitivity back into that region to get more nervous system cells on board and fibers on board. And we're trying to really make sure that we can address the sensitivity concerns early on. And then it moves into more, how do we work around the scar? And then how do we work at the scar? And then, of course, if you're working with a professional, they'll guide you on when that's appropriate. But typically, desensitization is first for the first few weeks. And then around the scar, you can kind of start around that 4 to 6 week mark. And then at the incision site, this is obviously, we want to make sure your incision is healed. It's safe. Like there's no risk of infection once you get your hands really near that incision that's fully sealed. And that usually takes about 6 to 8 weeks, just depending on each person for like total safety.
Yeah. This is fascinating, Jessica. I feel like I could ask you questions literally all day long. But I know that we don't have that much time. So I want to kind of start coming to the end. And this is where we like to ask you two things. One, what do you wish you knew before you became a parent in general? It doesn't have to be pelvic floor or postpartum related.
Grace. I mean, just give yourself grace. We're so hard on ourselves as moms. And I think that we all are our own worst advocate sometimes when it comes to like, are we doing this right? Are we doing this wrong? Oh my God, I should have done this better. I'm going to hold guilt over this. And like, I truly believe like we're all doing the best we can with like all of the knowledge and resources and tools that we have. But also we're humans taking care of ourselves too. And that's really important to acknowledge and just to give ourselves grace. And then, you know, guess piggybacking off of that is like trusting your intuition and trusting your own gut on your own kid. And that might be different than another mom doing it their way. And so I think we outsource that, especially as first-time moms. It's so easy to outsource what we should be doing with our own baby to all of these experts. You know, the question I like to ask a lot of our clients too is like, what do you think? Like, what's your intuition telling you? And really, women hold such wisdom and their intuition is typically never wrong. It's just about coming back to trusting that. And so as a first-time mom, I just hope that moms really lean into that and like flex that intuitive muscle.
I love that. Really come into your own body. We all need that trust. Okay. Question two. Is there something that you wanted to talk about that we didn't ask about or like, you know, it's kind of like that moment where you wanted to really bring up one point and we missed it.
We just kind of talked about intuition, right? And I think this is like my last message that I like to send off with moms. It's like, if you think that something does not feel right in your body, if you are struggling, but you feel like fear or embarrassment or shame around getting support around it, this is where I just like to tell moms, like, please drop it because it is so important for you to get the support that you need and not feel shame or embarrassment around the issues that you might be dealing with, especially something as vulnerable as pee in your pants or pelvic heaviness or leakage. or pain with intimacy, pain with a partner, like inability to orgasm, like, yes, that can feel like because of society has made us feel like those are taboo topics and we can't talk about them. But you taking that next step in that process for yourself is the most liberating, empowering thing that you can do for yourself. And so I just like to end all my podcast episodes that I do with people just like really trusting your intuition. If there's something tugging at your heart saying like, maybe I should reach out, or maybe I should get help with that. Like, listen, it's there for a reason. Please trust yourself. Please reach out and get support, whether that's with me or someone else. Like, I'm so just pro moms getting the support that they need.
I love it. If moms want to reach out and work with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find us over on Instagram at @yourpostpartumpt. And then if obviously it's like we have lots of resources that pinned on our pages as well. So if you are looking to maybe work more with us one-on-one and want to learn a little bit more about what that's like, if you just DM us the word restore, it's R-E-S-T-O-R-E, then you'll get our calendar. Either myself or my program director, Emily, will chat with you more one-on-one about to see if we can support you. But we also have a ton of other free resources and digital guides for postpartum recovery too. So if you're kind of wanting to do things DIY or look independently, there's a lot of different resources pinned on my Instagram page there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your expertise, for your wisdom, your intuition, your knowledge.
Thank you so much for having this podcast. What I wish I knew. I think that I wish I had this podcast, you know, years ago. So like this, just love what you guys are doing. And I'm so excited to continue to support you guys in that way too.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. If you liked what you heard, or if you're just like, okay, these are my people, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review.
And if you want to keep the combo going, come find us on Instagram @whatiwishiknew_.
We'll be back next time with more expert interviews, real life stories, and a couple of laughs. Until then, remember, we're all in this together.